Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Disney Plus and season 2 of The Mandalorian. Witness the journey of the Mandalorian and the child as they face enemies, rally allies, and make their way through a dangerous galaxy in the tumultuous era after the collapse of the Galactic Empire. For your consideration in all categories, The Mandalorian is now streaming only on Disney Plus.
How do you take a romantic comedy in New York City and not make it look like another Woody Allen film? On the Rocks filmmaker Sofia Coppola and her DP Philippe Lesourd are here to tell us how on Crew Call.
Sofia, my first question is, tell me about your inspirations for the movie. Watching it, there's this wonderful grown-up echo of Life Without Zoe, which you co-wrote. And then, you know, Felix, Bill Murray's Felix, feels like, you know, he's like an older, wiser version of Bob Harris. But tell me about it. What struck you to write On the Rocks and direct it?
Yeah, I was curious. I wanted to write about a grown daughter with her father story, and also thinking about cross-generational conversations between men and women, which we've been hearing a lot about the past couple of years, but more not through family as much. So looking at it through that lens and you know, looking at family and relationships and how they're affected about where we came from. And it was really fun to invest character that was a mix of, things from my dad and friends of his and people I've met, and just that kind of making this, kind of international, sophisticated man of the world, very kind of a man from another era. And I listened to Chet Baker when I was writing it, and it just felt like he's so different than the men of our generation. And how he interacts with women and where she comes from. So it was really fun to write that character. And when Bill came to mind, I definitely, you know, thought about his timing and his way with comedy and his heart, you know, how heartfelt he can be. So I think in that way, there's a relation to his Bob Harris character. But to me, this character is really different. I think he really embraced this kind of dandy and, you know, art collector and man of the world in a different way. So I guess my inspiration was taking these themes and then how to give it a light, effervescent touch so that you can enjoy being in their world, but hopefully there's, you know, a deeper conversation going on underneath. And I thought about the Thin Man films and this kind of those old comedies where there were lots of martinis to be had, and this idea of, you know, a little mix-up mystery. There were a lot of those, like, yeah, The Awful Truth and My Favorite Wife, they have, you know, some mix-up around infidelity. It's like a theme. So I try to infuse a little bit of that. And also, I've been living in New York and having little kids and trying to learn about being a writer and going into school with them, which was like a whole new world to me. And so, you know, trying to draw on my life to write about that in a way that's personal. So I wanted to set it in New York. And then, you know, there's the challenge of how do we film New York in this way that's romantic, but still naturalistic. So connected to with reality, but still a little bit of a movie version that could be beautiful and romantic. And there's, I think that, I don't know, one of the biggest challenges, how do you make a movie in New York that doesn't feel like a fake Woody Allen movie? Because his work is so iconic and connected with New York. And so how to make our own version. And that was something that I really relied on Philippe to help me. How do we tell this story and capture New York and the spirit of the movie and the emotions and make this world that that I wanted to feel a little bit elevated, but also approachable.
You know, I was going to say it really has a very distinctive look from a Woody Allen film. You've got a gorgeous palette of browns and blues, and there's like a gray hue, and just these beautiful images, like the pool in the beginning and the rotary stairs as she goes down,
thanks to Philippe.
How did both of you arrive at that color palette, and did you have any photography inspirations from any particular photographers?
I'm trying to think, because usually that's my starting point on a film, is putting photographs together and then sitting down with Philippe and the art department and in costumes, Stacy and Anne, and starting to put our look together. But this one was Beguiled, it was very specific from the beginning. And this one, I feel like we had to find our way more. Don't you think, Philippe?
I think this was a... Okay. I think I always felt that working with Sofia is like a big cooking family, and we all work together like an Italian pasta, and everybody is coming to the table. And to come with all, you know, what we are inside, and me as a foreigner, you know, in New York, and living in New York for the last 10 years. So I've probably have a different vision compared to Sofia. So I discover part of New York. I never saw that before with Sofia. And, you know, the 21 and all this club, I never saw that before. And of course you have the challenge, you know, with Woody Allen and Scorsese movie. So it's all the question. I think this have to come from the location, the choice of the location, and the palette that Sofia bring all together is how to shoot it. And I think what he drive most of the time, I think, with Sofia is she wants to be with a character. She never have a question where you want to put the camera. Is always the answer from Sofia. I say, I want to be with a character. And this feeling is very strong first. And that the first approach, you know, between this character and New York, and New York become another character. So you struggle to say the loneliness of this woman and New York. So the verticality of New York, you know, how to frame it, the format you frame it, the 55 New or not, you know, what type of location and the mood you bring to, you know, with the light and what the charm of the Bill and Rashida bring to the scenes, that everything participate together, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you have a lookbook, Sofia?
We always do, and I had images. I can't think specifically what they were. I mean, I was also thinking about movies like Tootsie and then visiting New York as a kid and going to these kind of uptown places. My dad had an apartment in the Sherry Netherlands, and also like going to 21 or Bemelman's Bar, that there were these sort of uptown places connected with another era, and we wanted to contrast that with her world downtown and the busy streets, and there's always construction going on and the hecticness, and then she gets in Bill's car and is kind of sealed off and whisked uptown almost to another city or another era. And that was inspired by kind of these older films when they go to the Russian Theater and Tootsie, or like these old comedies like The Thin Man and more of those classic comedies, and they sit at Bogart and Bacall's table at 21. And there's just kind of a little bit of a nostalgia for that world of gentlemen's and, you know, the Felix world. So kind of conjuring that up. But I can't think of specific photos. I know we looked at photos because Philippe and I, when we sit and talk and look at images, it just helps me articulate kind of what I have in mind and how he's interpreting it. And I do really always start with, I think the camera's point of view is always on my mind. Like, whose point of view are we looking through? And sometimes it'll feel weird. I'm like, well, whose point of view is that? So I think about, what the camera in relation to expressing the character. And this was very much, you know, through Laura's eyes and looking, experiencing New York through her. And how she experiences it differently when she's with Felix.
Do both of you come up with a strict shot list and do you stick to it or do you veer?
Never.
No.
No, I'm kidding.
Like, do you rip it up? Do you sometimes rip it up for the day, Sophia, and say, you know what? Let's take the camera, follow me, and let's run down this hallway.
Yeah, you know, I learned on my first film, I remember the producer saying, you have to come to set with your shot list. And I thought, well, how do I know if I haven't seen it yet? So now after all these years, Philippe and I have a good system where we watch the actors rehearse and see what they like to do. And I like to know what comes out of that and where they're comfortable. And then Philippe takes stills and we look at them together. So right before the scene, we kind of make a shot list with photographs that he takes during the rehearsal. And we talk about it.
But I think you are more complex than that because sometimes, because you always review the script together before the, you know, in preparation. And sometimes you have a very, very precise idea what the shot could be. You come to me say, and I ask you, so what do you feel about this scene? And sometimes you say, no, I need to see them, you know, Bill, because Bill gonna bring something different or how many shots I need to, you, because of course you need to see the actor. But sometimes you said to me, no, I see that on one shot.
Oh.
And of course it makes change.
Yeah.
When you see the action, you say, oh no, I see that on a wide shot. Oh, I see that on the closer. And for example, you see Bill, you know, coming for the first time we discover Bill. You yeah. say to me, I want this shot.
Oh yeah, I knew. Oh yeah, I forget that. It's true. Because I'm the writer, I picture certain scenes and images in my head before. And then it's true when Philippe and I talk about it, I can try to explain what I have in my mind when I picture it in my head when I'm writing it. And especially scenes that are more, less dialogue scenes, but just moments. I have an idea in my head if it's a wide shot or a close up. So thank you, Philippe. Yeah, that's part of it. But I think when it's a scene with a few actors that we have to block, then we figure it out when we see it. But usually, you come into it. I have a sense of what it should feel like, and then it's just a matter of finding what feels right or closest to what's in my head. And then it was. We kind of came up with the language or the visual of New York. And then for Mexico, I wanted this real contrast clash, almost like a Blake Edwards, you know, crazy trip to Mexico and how bright it was. And so we really embraced the tropical look of all those palm trees and colors. And she's wearing bright colors and the palette evolves into a whole different world.
There were two great shots that stuck with me. So the fire torch on the beach as she's walking, it's very symbolic. If you could talk about that after she discovers that her husband isn't having an affair. And then there's that gorgeous shot of her at twilight. It's kind of looking up and she's in the yellow dress and it's a contemplation of the aggravation of the journey.
Yeah, I mean, the torch, I mean, I think you always want to, the first thing you always want to express is the inner life of the character, the emotional state. So when she's stomping by with these flames, she's pissed that her dad dragged her down there and possibly jeopardized her relationship. And she's mad at herself for going along with it. So I think it's almost like seeing the fumes coming off of her. And I love the moment where she wakes up and just that kind of hangover of this crazy adventure, and that she woke up in the, you know, in a new day, the storm has passed and she has to kind of go back to her life in the sobriety of the early morning. There's something just kind of for the beauty and emotion of that moment.
But you remember the beach scene? We have lightning strike and rain coming up and we have to stop it and wait and still lightning strike. And I would say, we have to shoot. And all of this, you know, that was real. So all of this participate to everything because, you know, as a director and producer say, you know, okay, we have to stop. It's too dangerous. You know, say, no, we have to go. You know, the beauty of it.
Yeah, that helps. Yeah, it's true. That gives the energy to the shot. There might have even been lightning. I think we got lucky with the lightning in that shot. We had to shut down our generators because the storm was getting closer. And then Rashida had to rush to get the shot before. Yeah, it's fun how those things all add to the feeling of it.
And then going back toward the middle of the movie, there's that great, the great scene in the, when Bill's driving in the sports car and in the old fashioned sports car, it's got a very La Dolce Vita vibe about it. And even the way you shoot it is wonderful. Can you guys tell me more about shooting that scene, the car scene?
Yeah, we wanted it to have a lot of chaotic energy because, you know, it's like she goes in his world and it's crazy out of control. And with the sound design and the way that it's shot, it wanted, it always, I love the energy that it feels like you're with her in his craziness. And I like to call that our action sequence, which it's, I know it's not, but yeah, that was, you know, we just stayed up all night shooting with two cars and Bill was driving a lot of that. And Philippe, it's all a blur. I just remember like the light.
It was, no, I think first, we have to, you know, it was a headache. First we have, because in New York it's very difficult to shoot. So, you know, first you need to find which street we can block, how many blocks. So how many, so we have to, help us with that. We have to do a list of the shot. And, you know, we did a small quick time together about, you know, what type of scene you want to do, how many, you know, this is going to be dangerous. So all this technical detail, we have to put it together. Before that, and after Roman said, oh, we could use the rig, the biscuit rig. So we feel more free to shoot it. So we put three cameras, and the precision driver was driving the car. And of course, nothing was working perfectly. And I was losing the light, doing the shot and everything. And after, you know, Bill took the car by himself, drive all the on the city, and we've been shut down by the police. So yeah, it was a fantastic mess, I would say.
Yeah. And so that somehow we had enough to cut it together, but it definitely has that energy. But I remember sitting with you, Philippe, we had like toy cars on the desk and trying to understand how to, that was my first time shooting a car chase. So I'm not really quite sure how it all worked out, but it did have a lot of energy at the time and it was fun to cut.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Disney Plus and season 2 of The Mandalorian. Witness the journey of the Mandalorian and the child as they face enemies, rally allies, and make their way through a dangerous galaxy in the tumultuous era after the collapse of the Galactic Empire. For your consideration in all categories, The Mandalorian is now streaming only on Disney Plus. How did the two of you meet? And Sophia, how did you know Philippe was the guy? What won you over, you know, you worked on La Traviata with him and... Yeah,
can we do a commercial first, Philippe? I think like we did like a Dior perfume today.
Yes.
The way I met Philippe was my friend and a great cinematographer, Harris Savides, who I love to work with. When I met Harris, I always kind of struggled with, I mean, I had great experiences before that, but when I worked with Harris, it was, I don't know, he was such a poet and gentle person that it was really meaningful to me and just about how to approach filmmaking. And sadly, as he passed away, I felt like he looked out for me and he said like, oh, French guy. And I was like, which French guy? And he said, Philippe. So he recommended Philippe before he died. And it was so touching to me that he even thought about, you know, that was looking out for me to make sure that I would have someone help me. I met Philippe and we did a commercial together. And was it like a Dior perfume?
Yeah, it was a Dior. Yeah, it was a Dior commercial.
Yeah, and then we just, you know, worked on a few things. To me, it's so important to work with someone that is a real artist and has integrity. And so much of it is about that their priority is the same as me in making something as artful and beautiful as we can. And, you know, it's not about, that's what the main focus is making a story together, and that we're on the same page of wanting to make something that we believe in and care about, art. Yes.
Oh, thank you, Sophia.
It's beautiful. I mean, the contrast between this and Beguiled before. Beguiled was the hazy, the fog of the South, you know, like Vaseline on the lens.
No.
And it's just a beautiful contrast.
Yeah, a lot of smoke.
To the sharp, you know, the almost like a paint, you know, like the painting. I think of the pool scene in the beginning and the colors and how rich that is. You also, not only is it rich, but you make it warm. You know, you want to be in Laura's office, you know, with the windows. Everything is warm. Despite it being very sophisticated and luxurious, it's very warm and welcoming.
Because I think what is important.
That's good because we have to be cold.
Reading the script is a warmth of Laura and loneliness. So you have to take care of the character and the light approach of the scene. You know, from the marriage. You know, the wedding and in certain way for the feeling of a fall. So. So I think for us, for especially when Sophia is talking about the script, and so all the emotion at one point have to go through the visual. So you have to be very particular about the emotion you can bring on the scene with light and the way you shoot it. So, and Sophia pay a lot of attention to the size and the quality of how big the actor needs to be inside the frame and how far you need to be from them or not. So, but all the warmth of the, you're never away from them, you're always with them. And that is always a big discussion for Sophia, always, you know. And she said at the beginning, say, with a point of view. And most of the time it was Laura's point of view. And that brings something warm about it, I think, on the scene.
Sophia, were you, you know, when it came to reteaming with Bill, and I know that you did the Christmas Netflix special with him, was it challenging to come up with the next project for him? I mean, I got to think you obviously wanted to work with him again, but how, you know, yeah. It's organic. You, when it happened, it happened.
Actually, I didn't want to work with him again because I felt like what people are so attached to Lost in Translation, and I was nervous that I couldn't ever live up to that, or, you know, so I avoided it. And then finally, after all this time has passed, I think he's such a treasure that I would love, you know, I wanted to see him again in the kind of role that I imagined. And I thought, oh, to just get over my fear, and enough time has passed, we've never seen him, you know, as a father, I don't think, and we're both at different stages of our lives. So I thought, I'm just gonna, yeah, put my fear aside. And then I just knew he'd bring so much to the character. So I hoped that, you know, people would be open to seeing us do something in this way without, you know, comparing it too much.
So when I was a kid, I went to see, like, fresh off of Ghostbusters, I actually went to see Razor's Edge.
Yeah.
And I was like 12 or something. And I'll never forget how the critics were just really tough on him in the film. And what's so wonderful, what you and Wes have done is you've really made this wonderful, aura of comedy and drama with him, where it's not heavy-handed drama. It doesn't feel awkward. It's just this, it's really beautiful. And
go ahead.
Just striking that balance for you.
Thank you. I think Bill, that's one of the things that's so great about him is that he has such depth and, you know, can be so heartfelt and sincere and then so silly that he, you know, that he has both. And I know Wes and I both like to show to, you know, like that side of him. But I, Wait, what's the question?
I'm just talking about striking that balance and getting that type of performance. It's very hard to do dramedy, and you do, you know, you're one of the few filmmakers that, knows how to do it very well.
Thank you. I think so much of it is, yes, finding the tone, but that's what I like about life, is that you can have something that's really funny and tragic and sad at the same, they coexist, and he's so good at conveying both. So just kind of letting him do his thing. And I remember when we were shooting the scene in Mexico where he's talking about, you know, the death of a girlfriend and just revealing something. I remember my own life, you know, my parents telling me things about their life in a way that I hadn't ever seen them that way. And I was trying to convey that. And I was really struck with, I think we all were on set when we saw Bill kind of switch and really open himself up in this emotional way that you don't expect. And so it was really moving. And then like the scene right after gets really silly. So it was a balance for, you know, Philippe to help me shoot elements in between so that we could find our timing in the edit where we could go from something more serious to silly, and you know, you need that kind of buffer in between, and helps you kind of find the tone to switch back and forth in a way that hopefully the audience will go along with. Bill's so good at
that. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
But no, he's so smart and so, you know, in touch with, I don't know, just a great actor, in touch with his feelings, so he's able to go between the two.
And when it came to shooting Lauren Felix, the decision to go back and forth in the dialogue, as opposed to just seeing the two of them, can you both talk about that? And so, you know, the two of them in one shot versus going back and forth. Is it all about pacing and editing in that regard?
Yes.
You know, when you're dealing in a dialogue heavy scene?
I think it's more the mood of the scene too. If they're kind of lobbing it back and forth and having this banter, then you want it to feel one way. But then when they're sitting side by side, they're more united after a crazy car chase. So I think it's always the emotions that dictate how you want to shoot it. Don't you think, Philippe?
I think so. Yes, for you, it's really about the emotion going together with, you know, how tight you are. Because for a scene like that, you're always wondering, for example, can you move? Do we move the camera? Should we have include the shoulder or not? You know, when you do a reverse or not? And for you, it's never a question like that. It's always, you know, like, you know, when you have a dinner with somebody, you know, you want to have a strong conversation or just a normal conversation. You are with the people, so you are not aware from the scene. You're never aware from the scene, and that's a particular language you have, Sophia, overall in general. You want to be with them and not aware from them.
Thank you. I thought that. Yeah, I don't like to feel that I'm looking at them, but I do like to be with them. And it's true; it feels really different if you have their shoulder, and if you want the characters to feel connected or not. Like, there's a scene with Laura and her husband having a dinner where they're not connected, which you'd shoot differently. Then you'd probably include a shoulder when you want them to feel connected. It just gives that kind of some kind of subconscious feeling to the viewer, I think, of how to shoot it, if you want them connected or not connected.
And then your colors, do you know them? Your colors, do you know what you want accentuated right there as you're shooting it? Or is that something that you do afterwards? Like when you want to bring the blacks forward or the blues, the hues of the blues?
Is a question for Sophia.
No, I mean, I think you have an overall look idea, because that informs the sets and the costumes, and we wanted it to, I don't know, feel sophisticated in New York. It was definitely different than the dreamy, beguiled world, which was all pastels. This was more crisp and sharp, and her clothes are more drab at the beginning. And then as the character comes back to life, her clothes become brighter. So there's all of that. But as far as like the quality of the black and stuff, I think, I guess, in color timing, you find?
I think it's, in general, I try to be as close as possible for what we have on the set, so what we built on the set. So, and never, of course, the edit change, the pace of the edit change you how something need to be great. Because if you go to something very warm and you go to the next day to something, so you need to manage all of the pace of the color of the film overall in general. But I try to put, you know, on me always, and not as a reference, even we have reference together, but what the set and the actor is going to be, and I put that right away on the scene, right away. I try to be as close as possible, because the image, you need to build it before to shoot it. There's no way you're going to make it happen after the shoot. You need to bring everything together there on the set.
I think there's always a certain mood for each story that you just you set up the guidelines in the beginning, but you have an idea and then you just follow it as you go, and a lot of these were important to use real locations, so they dictated aspect of the palette, but you're also picking them within this world that we've kind of decided is the world we're going for, and editing that with the art department.
Before we go, Sophia, if you could share with us what you're working on next. And, you know, when it comes to independent filmmaking now, is it more challenging now to mount an independent film production than it was, say, back in 2003? Have things changed? Or the introduction of streamers, has that created more opportunity?
Yeah, I think it has created more opportunity. I think maybe around, I don't know, 8 or 10 years, maybe 10 years ago, before the streaming companies really emerged, I remember, you know, talking to friends like Tamara Jenkins and independent film, where but there's no way to make these movies. It was just dwindling. So I don't know, when I was starting, it was the late 90s, and it always seems like a struggle to get, we were always like scraping together a few million dollars to make a movie, and that's just, I don't know, that's just how independent film was. I was just glad to get to make a movie, but then it seemed to get, there was a point where it was getting harder and harder, and then I feel like the streaming services you know, just made more opportunity now, and there's a lot of independent filmmakers that wouldn't be able to, that are able to get, and I'll get the budget, like, and for this, you know, I always try to keep the budget as small as possible to have the most creative control, but it's expensive to shoot in New York, and so we didn't have to go to Toronto or something. It's important to really shoot in New York, and that we were able to because A24 that we worked with partnered with Apple, so I feel fortunate that we got to do it, and we got to shoot on film.
Oh wow. And can you share with us what you've been working on?
I've been writing. I'm adapting Edith Wharton favorite book of mine, so I've been working on that, which it's fun. It's kind of Gilded Age New York, so it's fun to go in my mind into that world during this time of ours. So we'll see. I never like talking too much too early, because hopefully it'll all come together.
Sophia Coppola and Philippe Lesord, thank you so much for joining us on Crew Call.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. It's always fun to talk
about cinematography. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Crew Call podcast on Deadline. I'm your host, Anthony D'Alessandro, and our podcast series has been produced by David Janov. Make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.